Milo's Pro Rewards members. Go big during Pro Savings Days at Lowe's. Buy more and save more with up to 20% off job site essentials like primed finger joint boards when you spend $3,000 or more. Plus, get up to 25% off PVC DWV pipes when you spend $250 or more. Shop Pro Savings Days at Lowe's. We help you save. Valid through 123. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
If you're paying more than $1 a month for any ED or hair medication, listen up. At Joy & Blokes, when you start TRT or enclomiphene, you can add any ED or hair loss prescription for just $1 a month. $1 add-ons with your hormone plan, and right now, all labs are 50% off. I'm Josh Whalen, founder of Joy & Blokes. I built this company because men are tired of paying for fragmented care without results. Every Joy & Blokes lab includes a visit with a licensed clinician who connects your symptoms to your biomarkers. You'll get a real plan that covers hormones, performance, and confidence. If you're considering TRT or enclomiphene, this is the most efficient way to do it. Get started at joyandblokes.com and use the promo code PODCAST. New customers get 50% off their labs, and for a limited time, you can take advantage of our $1 ED or hair loss add-ons when you start TRT or enclomiphene. Not available in all states. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Learn more at joyandblokes.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Fundamental Principle. I'm your host, Jerome. With me today, from the excellent Telegram channel, St. Michael's Operations, is Kaiser. Thank you so much for being here today, sir. Please tell the listeners about yourself and your organization and what it is you all do.
All right. Thank you for having me. Yes. I go by Kaiser. It is one of the many handles. Let's see. So St. Michael's Operations actually is was founded by a man I call my legate. Here and there, he goes by Will. I believe it was founded in 2016. It actually has an interesting history as far as that goes. What it has going for it is that it's kind of just started boots on the ground. I think I will save some elements of that history for, if you should have him on, or should I say when, he'll be able to tell the story much better, because actually that preceded our association, his and mine. So St. Michael's Operations made its name in church and parish protection and security, and it was founded West Coast. I mean, we've branched out since then. Now, me, I had in those days my own faction. 2015, February 2015 was where mine was founded. It was called the Neo Crusader Party, which was short for the Imperial Roman Catholic Neo Crusader Party. It was more of a movement about principles that, that'll inform all of these things. Now, it was, I forget when, but I'd have to look it up if you wanted some precision here. But it was sometime in the last few years, actually, where we united. I mean, we sort of met in 2018, I believe. So we've been rolling together for a while.
Coming up on 7 years then. I don't think that the persecution by the state is over. I mean, I applaud the president for gutting the FBI, because the FBI is, a internal Gestapo. It is a secret police force aimed at destroying the ability of Christian people, particularly white Christian people, to organize politically, and that's the chief goal of the system. And they're just regime apparatchik. So I wasn't at all surprised to see a few years ago when traditional Catholics were having their chapels monitored by feds, but. Very frequently,
man.
you know, our chapels are in bad parts of town, and we're surrounded by people who are on drugs, insane, homeless, you know, and our soft modern society doesn't know how to deal with these people. So if you could talk about, you know, the goals and mission of St. Michael's operations with respect to, you know, what, you know, going forward, yeah, is the overt persecution of the state going to lessen? Yeah, probably, but I still don't trust our society generally. It's not any less Christian or less anti-Christian today than it was 6 months ago or a year ago.
Man, there's so many things I could say about that, but honestly, I think just from the beginning, people are far... What we have are some insufferably passive underachievers. I mean, one of the scriptures that I quote most often is when God tells Joshua, "Get up off your face. Why are you lying there?" We, and I have seen, particularly in many traditionalist chapels, as a primary malady, many people who are too dependent, either, you know, on the word of their particular priest to do anything whatsoever, or they think, you know, that prayers alone are going to save them, or any other kinds of things like that. But how can I say? Oh, one moment. Okay. No, but in that, yes, they are far too slow to recognize these dangers. Now, of course, this doesn't apply to everybody. I mean, one of the advantages the legate Will always said was that on the West Coast, in L.A., people, all good people, live completely surrounded by enemies. So they are used to the idea of facing off against them and, you know, generally striving in day-to-day life. Now, in other places, like out in the Midwest, they may not be necessarily. Oh, they may be aware. Some of them do, in fact, read the news, but they'll still be very passive. And the reason I bring that up now is because some of them, in particular the older ones, are kind of living in the past as far as threats by alphabet men and such agencies go. They have memories, perhaps, of a time when an organization like the FBI actually did some good. I will probably say that in my immense prejudice or youth, I know nothing about that, nor do I particularly wish to. By the time it came out that the FBI was planting informants, you know, in traditionalist churches, I said to everybody, "Welcome to the party. I already knew this was happening. Are you just finding out?" I may have actually encountered one in my time too, but if he was one, he didn't fool anybody. He was easy to spot from a mile away by his fascination with Hegel. That made him stick out like a sore thumb.
Well, it's the reason, and actually, from the point of view of the system, right? Traditional Catholics are illiberal. The system mm-hmm. is based on liberalism, which is just the credo of Satan, non servium, right? And
yes,
and traditionalist Catholics understand that the system is liberal and that they are contra the system. And so if I was the system, I would look for my enemies and say, okay, where are the illiberal people? And they might be fascists, or they might be white nationalists, or they might be local nationalists, or might be traditionally religious,
well,
whatever it is. It would make sense for the system to monitor those people. The problem is...
We should qualify that statement, though. But unfortunately, I have encountered, even among trads, you know, like, say, in society masses, who do try to marry the two disparate worldviews. They try a little too hard to be good citizens in a liberal system.
Yeah, well, that's just the fact that lots of people have been raised in a... Thinking is hard work, and most people don't want to do it. Let's just be very, very clear here, and God bless them. They're got one foot in and one foot out, and they don't understand the problem. That's a failure more of our priests and bishops.
We're working on them, all of them.
Yeah. But even, right, like, there are people who don't understand that you might be okay with sodomites, but you think transsexuals, so-called, you know, it's really just men in dresses, are a step too far.
Well, I hear more insufferable things, honestly, at this point. Sure. But actually, if you're going to finish, go ahead.
The difficulty is, philosophically speaking, and both we understand this and the enemy understands this, that once you make one illiberal stand on something, when you just say, I don't care about the unbounded ego of this particular dude in a dress, I am making an exception to, you know, the unbounded liberalism of people can do whatever they want. This dude is not taking a shower in the same locker room as my teenage daughter, period. End of discussion. The second you do that, it necessarily follows that you can make that same, like, I'm not tolerating two dudes holding hands in the street. I'm not tolerating the constant barrage of, like, pretty redheaded, blue-eyed women in advertisements, you know, so-called, you know, married with to black men, right? Like whatever it is, the system tries to promote. It's always towards liberalism and dissolution of society. And the second you say no to any of it, you in principle have to say no to all of it. And
well, yeah, a lot of people deceive themselves about this fact, but all of this, there is no room for any of this in the Catholic faith. Pope Leo the 13th, you know, said, and I quote this often, you know, we've heard enough of the so-called rights of men. Let us hear about the rights of God. And this abominable division of public and private conscience has become a fundamental principle for many of these people as well, but it needs to be abolished. I've told even friendly, you know, right-wing factions, look, you cannot go back, you must not go back to the deistic Masonic teachings. If you do, I will not help you. Some of them just don't get it, but hey, this is why God must operate with a free hand.
Well, and the notion of a secular society is stupid. It doesn't even bear 5 minutes worth consideration of, like, well, if you're imposing secularism, that's just a religion, right?
Right.
And in fact,
I mean, there was no winning from this setup to begin with. A contrary example I give sometimes to people who bring this up is the Prussian constitution that had actually a very similar setup despite the monarchy, but explicitly stated the religion of the state to be the Christian religion. Sounds good on paper, but honestly, it's not that much better. Only few schools of thought, like the Carlists, you know, would think that a state without God is inconceivable, a literal impossibility.
Yeah, well, it's very... A state without a God is an impossibility for sure, because whatever it is, you know, the United States of America, USA stands for usury, sodomy, and abortion, right? That's USAID funding. Like, what did we do with all that money that was extorted from mostly, honestly, white fathers at the point of a gun? And we, you know, gave condoms to people in Botswana and Malawi and AIDS Medicaid. Like, why is that?
Yes, yeah. Funding gender studies in Iran, because that's totally high priority.
Right. Well, if you want to destroy Iran, just say, hey, we're trying to destroy Iran. You know, if you're going to send subversives in there, send in, you know, find some old school Jesuits and parachute them in and have them say the mass. And, you know, like, this is the great difficulty of modern American and the traditionalist movement is strongest in, of course, the United States and in France. And it is because France and the United States are the two ideologically liberal nations that the contradiction between the faith and liberalism is most apparent. And so more and more people have come to the conclusion that, you know, their nation or their government philosophy is inherently wrong. They must cling to the faith. You know,
I have seen that. In fact, it was only recently, I think towards the end of last year, that I became aware of the absurd laws pertaining to marriage in France, actually, you know, where one essentially must bow down to the state, put some incense on their altar for their ridiculous civil agreement, and then one may have a marriage in the church.
Elaborate on that, please, because I don't know anything about it.
So apparently, marriage in the church, in the eyes of the French government, is an afterthought. Everyone must do the civil union there instead. That is a product, a direct consequence, no doubt, of the French Revolution. So what Catholics there have to do is literally, you know, write up the agreement with the state. I guess they go to the courthouse or something. I don't know if before or after, I forgot. And then they go to the church and have the proper wedding. But they have to do both because of this annoying law.
It's very little different than in the United States, right? Where you still got to fill out the marriage certificate and do all this other stuff for the state. And
At least you can still have yours primarily in the church. I always thought the paper was more of a record-keeping purpose, but maybe I don't know, because I haven't done that myself.
Huh. Well, what I think, right, all of this philosophical stuff is interesting, and I certainly indulge in it more than I ought, probably. But the traditionalist, Not only is the post-conciliar church like on a collision course with the ground, you know, marriage is down, baptism's down, first communion's down, confirmation's down. The former Catholics are the second largest denomination in the United States of America. The bishops are totally dependent on government funding. They're all basically government employees. And it's impossible for them to square the circle of, you know, the liberty and exaltation of the church while being effectively, you know, Caesar's people smuggling service who, you know, has a nice real estate portfolio. And what is, and this is why Traditionis Custodes was a thing, is that they saw the liberation of the true mass in 2007. Mm-hmm. Like, they can read an actuarial table just as much as anyone else can. And, you know, the Society of St. Pius X in France isn't quite to the point where the majority of priests in France are ordained every year are society priests or traditionalist priests, but it's getting closer every year.
Oh, yes. And they wouldn't exert this kind of effort every single week to keep tradition down if they didn't fear a threat.
Right. And of course, the only people left in Europe who actually go to church are the traditionalists. And in the United States, once the boomers are gone, the Novus Ordo Mass is gone. I mean,
modernism is a pathetic religion in the faith, but in the words of Bishop Williamson, a happy clappy faith. It has nothing to offer.
Yes.
And unfortunately, it's already suffused throughout society. But actually, you know, I should have mentioned a couple things about that. I mean, one should not see, you know, the abstract discussion we're having right now as extraneous. I think it's honestly the most important element of all of this. We mentioned St. Michael's operations earlier. This is, at this point, a branch of the Neo-Crusader movement. You know, there are others, and they all serve different purposes, like tools in their box. But all these branches go to the same tree, and that is to and its purpose is to extirpate all of this heretical thought and replace it with something. Because in the first place, of course, it needs to be extirpated. People need to be clear on that. Too many people are not on the same page about that. And all of their excuses vary, you know? I mean, I've heard everything from Old Testament obsolete to my kingdom is not of this world. Any excuse to not fight. But people, hey, many of them are not thinking of we need to actually fix this mess. Or as the Spanish saying goes, the Magi, the Goth kings, are not going to come to feed us. We need to actually do things to fix that, but that takes doing. Now, if I digress just a second, the maverick philosopher Francis Schaeffer outlined a particular way that societies change. He said, if the vanguard basically goes with philosophy and then to art, then music, then general culture, then theology. I mentioned modernism is already suffused in all of society, so it's already gone through all five stages. You may have seen once I have posted something about that, but we need to do the same thing, and we're getting there, honestly, but it is one of the other things that we do have to do is talk this philosophy, produce art and culture, because when uprooting this evil, you know, takes its course, it will leave a massive vacuum. And then people will naturally look for something to replace it with. And they will justifiably look to us to answer all of their questions. Well, what happens next? Oh, and we will have to answer all of the be pressing questions of life. You know, how should we then live? It's not different than it was before.
Indeed. And I just posted a couple days ago or yesterday, I can't remember. You know, people tend to forget this, but at the height of Christendom, say 1345, right before the Black Death, I think that's a pretty good bellwether for, you know, Christendom at its height. Every political leader was capable of great violence at a personal level. Like, within arm's reach, they could swing a sword and stab somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them had.
Right. Well, it was certainly a world where you had to.
Right.
Well, as it is now.
Well, and that, you know, the fundamental conceit of liberalism, that there is such a thing as a neutral society, and that there are things that, you know, that we can just debate everything, and that there's no time where violence is on the table, right, is just a flawed, false conceit, among the many other things about liberalism that are just plain wrong, right?
It's a bold-faced lie, a switcheroo.
Yeah, and of course, right, so the crime that happens around your chapel in the neighborhood, the graffiti, the trash, the poorly maintained homes, that's public policy. That is there by intent.
Ah, yes. But see, this is where the hand of God, you know, raised up these events to make our arguments for us. And this pleased me greatly. When Roe versus Wade was overturned, the acolytes of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you know, rose up and started burning the joint. And hey, they did it themselves. The firebombings, the vandalisms, you know, with threats. And naturally, we posted the pictures around and said, hey, look at this. Now, if I'm being blunt to all the people, how long do you have to wait until you polish off all the rust you've accumulated? I mean, moss is going to grow on you. Are you going to wait until Nashville Mark II to happen at your particular church? I don't think so. In fact, when I myself militarized, so to speak, in the literal sense, was in a recent shooting, you know, that took place 12 minutes away from my work site when I found out. And that's when I said, yeah, this is getting way too close to home.
Well, and this is a choice, right? Like, this is not just like the weather that just happens to you and the rain falleth on the unjust and the just alike, right? The crazy people in the street, the people who, you know, will defecate on themselves inside a church, inside the pew, right? That sort of thing, that's a policy. Those people should be locked up in a camp, in a facility for crazy people. And the government decided that that was too much work and required too much caritas, and that they weren't in that business anymore. And so that they were going to, you know, just foist those people off on the rest of us. Now, did Christendom have better ways to deal with this when we had more religious brothers and sisters to care for the poor? And, you know, when Sister or, you know, Brother Benedict or Sister Salaska were taking care of these people, you know, what does Brother Benedict need? Three robes, you know, one robe for day-to-day wear, one for, you know, Sunday Mass, and then one for, you know, getting dirty, a couple pairs of sandals, and, like, food, right? He has no real material needs beyond just survival. And so he can do things like care for the poor, care for the mentally ill, care for the elderly at a much lower cost to society than someone who's being paid $70,000 or $80,000 a year to do so, because that's their job. And you know, they have a family, and they're required by, you know, the cost of living and everything else to get that $70,000 or $80,000. So it's possible to care for the poor and the needy and the helpless in a Christian society by just not paying as much for it. And
I notice here the pernicious influence of modernism in all its forms has seeped through as well. One of my brightest memories, well, I should say most glaring memories from college, was how a neo-Marxist professor, you know, taught his degenerate way. You know, that's a whole topic I'm not going to get into at the moment, but he had an eclectic way of going about it. It was, most of the sources that he picked, you know, were either evangelical or from whatever, but he picked exactly one proper Catholic source, and it was St. Francis of Assisi, of course. I mean, naturally, they would never, you know, have you read any of these kings that we mentioned or anything else. And what was the effect of that? It had me thinking for a very long time that St. Francis was some kind of patsy, and I scorned his name. Now, obviously, the very concept of suffering for Christ hadn't even entered into my thinking then. But I imagine many others are in a similar boat. I tell the traditionalists, especially, you know, those who were fortunate enough to grow up with this, we live in a world very far away from those people out there. They know nothing about this.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not even their fault, right? They haven't been taught. And the Novus Ordo Faith, I think you can make a pretty good case. The good bishop, the late Bishop Williamson, who to my mind was the best bishop in the world, certainly in that speaks English, because I'm not familiar with. I mean, there might be some sort of fantastic bishop who speaks Portuguese or something, and I have no idea what he said. You know, he could be just spitting fire every day from the pulpit, and I have no idea because I'm monolingual, unfortunately. But it is impossible to come to correct conclusions when you have no correct data. And that is essentially, if you look at the USAID scandal from a meta point of view, the whole point of the project was to just feed bad garbage information to the people so that they wouldn't come to correct conclusions. Like the whole BLM thing, right? Like, you knew it was nonsense. I knew it was nonsense. We both probably thought it was some sort of color revolution, CIA, George Soros thing. We didn't know who was behind it, but we knew it was all nonsense. But
yeah,
the average.
Honestly, I never looked at it that closely.
Right. Well, I just knew it was nonsense because the Negro has never been anything but, you know, a stick in the hand of the Jew. That's what they are. That's what they've always been. They've never been anything but that on a political level, and right. It doesn't take a genius to see that, look at that. You know,
I shudder to think of what Pudgy is, a locust in the hand of Satan or something.
Yeah, right. But again, the average Novus Ordo Catholic just is temperamentally conservative, small c. And so they trust institutions, and they just, well, the institutions functioned fine when I was a kid. Why shouldn't they function fine now? I says, well, actually, there were some deadly philosophical errors that kind of wormed their way in when, you know, you boomers were kids. That you think it's the same now, and you don't understand enough philosophy or theology to see the mistakes, and you were cruising on enough societal momentum from the remnants of Christendom that, you know, it worked in 1962, but, you know, we're a good, you know, 60 years past that now. So now the system falls apart.
I mean, I'm sorry to say, but almost all Americans are woefully ignorant of world history, and, you know, not even generally world history, but specifically the history of other nations. And for purposes of this conversation, of Crusader history, just the gathering of data that you mentioned earlier, you know, has become a Herculean task of nightmarish proportions. Between the founding of the original Neo-Crusader Party in 2015, you know, past its unification, you know, until 9 years later, I spent those 9 years doing nothing but gathering data, doing philosophical study and historical study into what I believe is the solution to this entire crisis, and that's the example of General Francisco Franco. But the 10 years ago, many people here in America still didn't even know who that was. Thankfully, I think I have seen visible evidence that our efforts, you know, have made a difference. The translation of the film, maybe, hey, I don't know if, say, Tucker Carlson saw it, but he was the first one I remember who actually mentioned this on television, you know, and showed the famous picture of communist militias, you know, shooting a statue of our Lord Jesus Christ. There was a time when such things had never been heard in the public eye. And there's still much that needs to be translated and brought into the public eye, but it's still all foreign. You know, it's the construction of a Catholic history that has never existed in this country before.
Well, it's important to remember that, you know, the Carnation Revolution in Portugal was a CIA front, right? Franco's revolution in Spain would have stayed fine, would have presented an illiberal functioning society, but the Spanish were undermined from within by being members of NATO. And it's, you know, the United States has always been a revolutionary country.
Yeah.
And you know, the great Archbishop Marcel Lefebvre told his seminarians, who were, you know, traditionalist and mostly European, you know, you are all children of the revolution. And they were like, but Monsignor, we're here because we hate the revolution. We don't want to be part of it. So it's like, that doesn't matter. I'm not saying you're wrong to dislike the revolution. I'm saying it's like the air you breathe, and you don't understand how the revolution has affected you. And it's going to take many years of careful, diligent soul work to purge the revolutionary ideas from your thoughts and your actions.
And oh yes, and that's been the work.
That's been the work, and it is important on a day to day level, right? My former guest on this program, as well as my friend Pete Quiñones, has had a wonderful series. The great American Catholic professor, Walt Carroll, wrote a wonderful book about the war in Spain called The Last Crusade. And my own copy is very dog-eared, and there are certain parts of it that just I cannot read about the siege of the Alcazar without crying. It is.
Oh, believe me, we know this book. Yes, I've actually made it the middle part of a mandatory curriculum that I put everybody through. I mean, through the years we've had to refine the process, I'm glad to say we've turned it into an assembly line for the youth.
Good, good.
Yes. If they are, you know, if they are not Catholic, I start them with Peter Kemp's Mine Were of Trouble to get them familiar with it. Everybody reads The Last Crusade, whether they're Catholic or not, and then I have them watch the film, Raza, or Race.
Yes. And it's vital to understand that the liberal is a religious fanatic.
Yes, him too. Welcome to the club.
But and you cannot fight a religious war with no religion.
Oh, yes. Right. And this we must bring to the forefront, because a lot of our more placid friends, these underachievers I mentioned, don't understand. The reason that, quote unquote, we kept getting beaten at every turn is because the enemy, you know, whether he is this middle management liberal or the Zog or anyone else, they're playing to win. Okay, they're not messing around. They're not playing at war or anything. But these guys are. I don't know what they think they're doing. They think, I suppose, if I take their words at face value, that we are here to serve them, you know, to wash their feet instead of wash one another's feet, and that somehow this will give us victory.
Yeah, of course, it's an absurdity. And
charity at the expense of justice, turning one virtue against another.
Well, and, you know, what does St. Paul say? But he who does not take care of his own house is worse than an unbeliever who has denied the faith, right? This USA scandal, we're recording this in early February of, you know, of 2025 here. So that's currently in the news. Huge numbers of people in the world are not capable of self-government. If the last 5 years has taught anyone anything, it is that the vast majority of human beings do not want to be free and are not capable of it on their best day. They're just not. They want to be told what to do. They'll take the vaccine. They'll take the jab. They'll lock themselves in their house. They'll go half crazy. And that's fine.
Once upon a time, people knew this. They called it the aristocratic principle, because the folks who ought to know have told us how it's got to be. The divine right, whatever you call it. But noblesse oblige, you know? The better and more fit people for such burdens as, you know, requirement of wisdom and all, they lead, and the rest, they can better themselves if they wish. If anything is a human right, I think that should be. That if someone wants to better himself, he should be able to. But, you know, otherwise, it's not important for them to understand. Just obey. And a lot of people are happy with this.
Yes.
But well, look, when election season comes around, almost all people I've ever seen don't even want to do it. I don't want to do it. It's a bothersome annoyance.
Sure it is.
Voting,
it,
I mean.
It's
got to do the research.
Yeah, it's obnoxious. And, right. St. Michael's Operations, you know, exists to, you know, secure and defend traditional chapels against disruptions of parish life and of the sacraments. Is that a fair summation of what you guys do?
Yes, and protect, of course, people and property, you know, from harm, as always.
And this is important, because when you understand that, you know, violence, quote unquote, I'm not endorsing violence. I'm not saying I like violence. I'm not saying it's fun or
for legal reasons.
Well, and just in general, it's not fun. Like if you've ever experienced it, it's not a good time. But
well,
that is the domain of sovereign men, like the ability to inflict violence, like that's the privilege of the sovereign. And if you're not capable of the self-discipline necessary to do what you said, you know, to go through the reading, to do things like to read the Church Fathers, to read, you know, St. Thomas Aquinas, to read, you know, the counter-American Revolution stuff like Strictures Upon the Declaration or Bonald or De Maistre or, you know, who Thomas Carlyle. Pick your, you know, actual genuine thinker or John C. Calhoun, right?
If Tocqueville or the Anti-Federalist Papers?
Yeah, I mean, that was proved all correct, you know. Federal Farmer, right? like, if you're not capable of engaging with the contra position of your society and seeing whether or not it has merit, right, then you're not capable of understanding when or where, like, you're, to use a kind of trite term, you're not an aristocrat of the soul, right? And the notion that people who have done the reading, who have done the work, who were capable of seeing through all the nonsense in 2020, should have their ability to defend themselves and their families circumscribed by the state because the state doesn't like... No. The state needs to listen to me, not because I'm some sort of great moral paragon, but because it's just I'm demonstrably not an idiot and everyone working for the state, you know, capital S state, is. Because I would solve the problem of homeless people on the street and trash and, you know, what pick whatever problem. It's all 80-20, you know.
Well, see, that's why earlier I brought up that our objectives clearly, and all of, now I'm including all of us in the society, you know, at large, are not the same. By this time it's going to sound a bit trite, but it is true that the government does not have the common good interest anymore. In fact, I think politics themselves stopped being about virtue ever since Machiavellianism and Hegelianism became the modus operandi. But this that you bring up is not a truth issue. It's not a veritas issue. Nobody's engaging this, you know, with intellectual honesty, so to speak, with any interest whatsoever in the truth. This is a question of dogma. It's like when one of these guys gets incredibly upset when you question the vaccine. You know, it's not because he thinks you're espousing something untrue or some point of science. No, it's because you're threatening his faith in the state, you know, in the secular state that has taken the place of God alongside with the impersonal forces of economics. This now is the one making your moral decisions.
Right. Yeah. It's I'll never forget it. It was probably about 15 years ago. Now, I was driving home from something on Sunday morning, and was about to get ready to go to Mass. I'd had some sort of obligation, and I pull up into my garage, and I was listening to the radio, and the NPR had an ethicist on.
Oh, that's rich.
Right. And this was Sunday morning, and the NPR ethicist had, you know, like, things to say. I'm like, well, isn't this just a Sunday sermon for shitlibs? And then it clicked with me. This is just religious radio for upper middle class atheistic shitlibs. Like, this is their religion. NPR is their religious radio. And if you've ever done a road trip across rural America, and I have many times, there are huge numbers of places in America where you only get two religious radio stations, you know, National Public Radio and then whatever local Christian radio station is available, you know, for the 50 miles around that, you know, will broadcast, you know, D. James Kennedy or something like that, but is, you know, the Bible Radio Hour. And because they're both religious, and so people will lose money to bring the good news of, you know, professional managerial shitlibism or the gospel, you know, mostly Protestant radio, but that's what we're dealing with, right? And people, you know, traditionalists understand that, in fact, their religion and Shitlibism are not compatible. And that's what must happen, is the average person has to understand that you can either be a capital L liberal or you can be a Christian, but you cannot be both. John Henry Newman, you know, had it called a century and a half ago when he said that, that liberalism and Christianity were incompatible.
I have never understood how or why this was ever passed in the foundational thought of this country, because this is perhaps, I've called it the biggest case of, it's not a bug, it's a feature in any politics anywhere. If you really think about what they are espousing when they speak of all this freedom, is you will give leeway, you will give license or tolerance, or at very least a platform to viewpoints, ideas, and philosophies that from your standpoint you know to be wrong. You are allowing error, you are allowing moral threats in essence to exist in the society. And yeah, you're just supposed to. They idealize it. Sharing tables with your enemies becomes a way of life. To me, this is a subversion of sound judgment, of common sense. It doesn't make sense.
No, it is a ridiculous...
In no other country is internal dissent, you know, a fundamental principle.
Right, yes. And actually, in our own society, right, like people will talk about the oppressive and getting back to the vision of the founders and blah, blah, blah. Like, no, that's just all nonsense. There's a hegemonic religious vision of society that holds sway over every society in the history of the human race.
It took some years for it to click, but I realized only in retrospect why some of those founders, I think it was Washington himself actually, didn't even like parties, political parties, for this reason. He probably saw that coming.
Well, and in Washington's day, right, like they were hardcore deist Protestants. So anyone who wasn't a deist Protestant was a dissenter and a problem, and they would do things like oppress you.
Because, well, there were also the Masons.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Masons, but right. And so there was a reason the Catholics were oppressed, because the Catholics at the time understood that there was a philosophical problem with, you know, deist liberalism. And it's absurd for us to sit here and say that this is going to just, you know, we're all just going to work it out. Like, no, arguments are possible where people reason themselves into things. You cannot reason, you cannot reason someone into something that they did not reason themselves like out of something. You cannot reason someone out of something that they did not reason their way into it. So you can't convince someone who's, say, a Muslim, right, from their earliest days, and being Muslim is part of their racial identity, it's part of their family identity, it's part of their, you know, and they're a Muslim immigrant, and so that they view themselves as Muslim. You can't make, you know, the Quran is, Muhammad probably didn't even exist, and if he did, he certainly was, you know, like he was a horrible person if he did, just based off of what's in the Quran, let alone, you know, some of the hadith and other stuff. Like, but if you try and reason with someone about how ridiculous Islam is, for instance, right, they're just going to attack you because they see it as an attack upon them personally, and in a very real way, it is. If they're conception of themselves starts with, I, Muhammad, am a Muslim. And I am,
well, if you dare to question it, he will fly up and split the moon in two, so don't you dare.
Right, yeah, of course. Right, but, like, if that's, you know, like, okay, well, we'll just sit there. No. Your only way to avoid conflict with people who have what my friend Pete called first order disagreements, like disagreements about fundamental issues, is to separate from them. You cannot share society. And, you know, I'm enough of a libertarian still that if you just gave me Tradcathistan, right, in, say, North Idaho, Eastern Washington, wherever, right, or let us turn Kansas and around St. Mary's into Tradcathistan. In 10 years, the place would be prosperous and clean, and, you know, there'd be good political order, and people would want to move there.
You know, I should mention, though, as you've mentioned that, that there is more to that than just the mundane. And people have forgotten this now because they don't read the scriptures, especially not the Old Testament. You know, the last thing I would want is for them to play into the stereotypes. You know, a lot of Protestants think Catholics don't read the scriptures at all. But, well, I will not digress. Here's my point. That not only will the place become clean and prosperous and just and peaceful because of good principles, but because God will bless it. He has written it. This is an as axiomatic a rule as, you know, the Father turning the world and causing the rain to fall. Yes, He will bless those who keep His commandments. He has promised it many times over and renewed those promises in the New Testament. This is a fact of life. Yeah. And then how are we surprised when a great chastisement has come? Because some fools decided they knew better and all the good little Christians allowed themselves to be taken in by them.
Right. I forget. Goldstein, I think his name is. Al Goldstein. You know, I believe he was the publisher of Screw magazine.
At least he wasn't Manuel Goldstein.
Is, you know, a notorious pornographer. And he himself said, we Jews created pornography because we think Christianity sucks. We think Catholicism sucks. That's not me. That's not, you know, notorious anti-Semite Jerome. That's him.
Mm-hmm.
And a society that said, hey, there's a firewall around Tradcathistan where we just don't let that stuff through. It doesn't occur. If you try to open up a pornography shop on Main Street in our town, you know, in St. Michaelsville, not only would you not be given the permits, but if you try it anyway, you might fall down the stairs a bunch. You might get escorted out of town.
Man, the whole world would be, you know, is drawn to this like moths to a flame. I mean, the very idea of virtue terrifies, you know, the servants of the ruinous powers. They'd make a beeline straight for it as soon as anyone stood up and did this.
Yeah, and you know, of course, the smallest society is the family, right? You fathers of families, you got to make sure your families are virtuous. And that starts with making sure you yourself are virtuous. But this notion that Christian men have this duty to let society fall apart because it would infringe upon the freedom of lunatics and Satanists and Jews is completely anathema.
It's positively blasphemous.
Yeah, King St. Louis IX would look at you and then say, okay, either you're too dumb to be left unsupervised, in which case we're going to stick you in Benedictine monastery, and, you know, Brother Benedict is going to just make sure that you, you know, don't hurt yourself, but you're not making any more decisions, right? Or you're just a bad person and you have the choice of, like, leaving right now or I shove a sword through you. And any Christian prince from the height of the Middle Ages or any sane society ever would look at people who were actively trying to destroy the society, and instead of saying, oh, well, we just kind of have to let them do it, would say, get out.
That's exactly what I meant when I said sharing tables with your enemies. I mean, how does anyone not see this? Because they choose not to. It's part of the dogma.
Right. It's part of the dogma of liberalism. And of course, we, you know, the liberals, a friend of mine has often said, and is completely correct, the only two kinds of people who know what's actually going on in the world are anti-Semites and Jews. And that is because it is only the person who understands the religious nature of the conflict that understands the axioms in conflict, that understands the actual conflict itself.
You know, that's also why I mentioned, you know, middle management liberals, that turn of phrase. Oh, yes. The whole, you know, ghost of Christian nationalism, as they call it, didn't come out of thin air. I don't believe myself, you know, that a MAGA movement will impose a totalitarian theocracy or any such rubbish. I think they're not capable because it's not, as it were, the American way. But why are they talking about this then?
Be cool if it
because we'll get to that. Well, of course, I mean, all in due time. But the point being, the devils who control them, they're puppeteers. They are the ones who know where the true threat lies, where it's going to come from. They can see it on the horizon and smell it centuries away, even where none but the highest of their mortal servants can.
Of course. Of course.
And that's also why, where they made up a bunch of stories about Hitler, Franco, they just tried to completely bury. They dedicated a whole century of effort to make sure nobody even knew his name, because you can't spin it in a way that makes liberalism look good. There was even, sorry for digressing, I guess, but here there was even a communist song. No, I don't know if you've ever heard it. The Last of the Lincoln Veterans, I believe, which accuses the United States, saying Hitler sold Franco trucks and Uncle Sam sold him the gasoline to run them.
Yeah. Now, the Abraham Lincoln Brigade was a disgusting group of evil people.
I'm glad it existed, though. It made for a good story at the Pingarron.
I suppose. And you know, how many people who are supposedly good Catholics, even people might know Franco, but nobody knows Salazar. I mean, not that I, you know, and I have no problem with Mustache Man or Mussolini or any you know, interwar leader who was a solid Christian, which most of them were. Pétain was a devout Catholic, and you know, Metaxas was, I believe, a Greek Orthodox. Pilsudski was a devout Catholic. You know, the Hungarian Aerocross Party was led by Christians. Like the entire interwar, you know, pantheon of bad guys were all believing Christians.
Yeah, on at least some level. And although I guess I should take the opportunity to say something else about it, now I know that one way or another, this is going to cause controversy because nobody seems to like this appraisal, but I think it is the correct one. In my mind, the Austrian painter is not different than any other leader than one might consider a great leader, but non-Christian, like many American presidents, maybe even the current one. And I'll explain what I mean by that, though. I can point to many cases where I say he has done good, but I can point to other cases where I say I'm not satisfied with his judgment. My own impression from reading his writings and hearing his speeches is that he lapsed from Catholicism into a kind of deism, which, you know, makes him, in my eyes, a great leader, but not a crusader, not the equal of Franco by a long shot.
Well, I could,
though he's not the devil himself.
Sure.
Clearly.
Which is, of course, our secular regime has painted him as. And I would argue that he was just an anti-clerical Christian, and that given the quality of the clergy in his country at the time, if you read the magisterial work by the late great Father Anthony Cicada, all the modernists were like in Berlin and Freiburg and other places in all the liturgical revolution of the council has its roots in you know, the Rhine. And it was bad news.
It's always the German princes.
anyway, we're at about an hour, and we both have very busy days today. Could you please give the listeners some more information about St. Michael's operations? You know, where to reach you guys, a website. You know, if people are interested in learning more about you guys, where and what can they learn? And we'd love to have you back. It's been an interesting philosophical discussion, but I strongly believe in not only your mission of securing the persons and property of traditionalists through, you know, training and individual chapels doing for themselves because it's just the state won't do it. But with that proper philosophical illiberal understanding, because without that proper philosophical base to work from, you're going to just make a bunch of errors. And so I think this has been a very valuable discussion tonight, this afternoon, but I would really like it if you could give our listeners more information about yourself or where to reach you guys, all that.
Naturally. Well, let's see. St. Michael's Operations, I mentioned, is primarily dealing in parish security. I guess you could think of it in one sense as a fraternity. Officially, the description is it's a nonprofit and fraternal association of Catholic laymen, helping to protect the church and provide the works of mercy and justice. It does not have a website at the moment. Actually, a lot of that framework has been spotty because the last few years we've pivoted largely to in-person operations rather than, you know, online. But, you know, we'll work on that. The legate himself no doubt could tell all of this in much more detail because he's actually the one he was the founder of this and is also the one, directly in charge of it. The St. Michael's Operations Telegram channel and its comment section are a good way to reach it. I guess you could also, write to one of my mailboxes. That would just be Kaesar, Kaesar, Amadeus at protonmail.com. I mean, that is the official point of contact for the CCF, a sister organization. So I don't mind. If anyone whatsoever wanted to write to there, they could go right ahead. Although if they just want to complain, direct it to the ADL offices in New York. The ideal of St. Michael's Operations is, of course, for moral as well as practical reasons. Obviously, we want to prepare everyone before a Nashville Mark II or any such nonsense. But also, one thing I like to tell everybody, though some disagree, is that heaven had an army before it needed one. There is intrinsic glory and honor in this sort of thing. To be strong is to be good. Yes. It is good to be strong.
Yes, indeed, it is. And the discipline and self-denial that comes with training and disciplining the mind, it strengthens the soul and the body, and it's a virtuous circle.
Society doesn't want to glorify this anymore.
Right. I've never met a man who took training seriously who was mentally lazy. Never. They were always thinking, always working, always growing. I've met a lot of lazy people physically who were also mentally lazy. And I just strongly encourage listeners to reach out to St. Michael's Operations if that's what you're interested in. But also, if there's something else in your area that you're interested in, get out, tribe and train, because the enemy's doing it too. Kaesar, thank you very much from St. Michael's Operations. We'll have to have you and the legate back at some later date. But this has been an excellent philosophical conversation and a good press ease to further conversations. So thank you very much, Kaesar.
Indeed.
And God bless you. Thank you very much.
Hail Christ Emperor, Deus Vult.